the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to have a conversation about caring for livestock after a wildfire and also caring for the people who are taking care of those cattle and sheep, goats, horses, whatever other livestock they may have that have been impacted by these kind of events. To talk about this, I'm joined today by four veterinarians. First is Dr. Becky Funk and Dr. Brian Vanderlei, who are part of the Great Plains Veterinary Education Center near Clay Center, Nebraska. And I'm also joined by two colleagues of theirs, Dr. Randall Spare and Dr. Travis McCarty, who are both from Kansas, who've had experience with this kind of event in the past. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for putting together, Aaron.
Before we dive into the topic at hand, Dr. Spare, Dr. McCarty, maybe just tell a little about yourselves, your background, how you got to where you are now, and your past experience with this kind of event.
My name is Randall Spare. I'm a veterinarian in Ashland, Kansas, and we've had the experience of going through several wildfires, starting in 2016 with the Anderson Creek fire east of us and Comanche Barber County, and in 2017 the Starbuck fire consumed 500,000 acres in Clark County. And then the fire several weeks ago, about a month ago, the Road Ranger fire that came through Ashland, southern Clark County. And both Dr. McCarty and I experienced all of these fires firsthand and the impact of it on livestock, on the terrain, the ecosystem of our communities, and also just the devastation to livestock, and also the trauma that and the challenges that those people went through as they cared for their livestock. So our heart hurts for the people of Nebraska. It's devastating, but there's hope at the end of the tunnel. There's light at the end of the tunnel. And if you're going through these times, make sure you continue to reach out to your neighbors and ask for help. And we all know we're not, the agricultural community is a pretty self-sufficient group, and we don't do a very good job of accepting help or asking for help. So I think that's one of my first recommendations is find people that can help you.
Yeah, absolutely, Dr. Spare. Yeah, my name is Travis McCarty, and Dr. Spare is right. I've worked with him throughout the years, and those fires he mentioned were devastating fires, and all those points are exactly right. It can be a trying time. But if you persevere and keep working with each other and keep reaching out, there will be a light at the end of the tunnel. So absolutely.
Dr. Vanderlei, Dr. Funk, what are you hearing for producers in Nebraska and from veterinarians that you're working with in terms of circumstances they're seeing right now?
So a lot of what we're hearing, Aaron, is not much, which is a little bit comforting on one hand, but on the other hand, I know Dr. Vanderlei and I were kind of waiting for the shoe to drop. And I guess that's why we wanted to do this conversation, because we haven't had a lot of firsthand experience with these type of events. So reach out to colleagues who unfortunately have, because we know from discussions with them that even though it looks like we're getting through kind of that initial crisis period, there's a long tail of things that we have to think about from an animal health and a people perspective going forward. So we're not hearing much, but that doesn't mean we're not listening. And certainly reach out to us if we could help be of help to you here in Extension.
Yeah, I would echo what Dr. Funk said. I've heard a couple of one verifiable direct report of some issues with burned livestock, and just a lot of hearsay, but I will echo the same thing. Our thoughts and prayers are with those who have been through this and who continue to experience the fallout from these fires. And it's very much our goal to do what we can. And I guess I would add to something Dr. Funk said is, if you think we can help, definitely reach out. If you're not sure of what help you might need, still reach out, and we'll do what we can. So Aaron, we can put together some, I think most of our contact information is pretty readily available for those that are out there, but we just want to make sure that the folks that are affected, folks that are trying to help, know who they can reach out to and they can fruitfully serve in these things. There's quite a road ahead, but I appreciate Dr. Spare and McCarty saying, you know, they can get through this.
Dr. Spare, Dr. McCarty, from your experience, obviously we're a week out or so, a little more from the initiation of that fire. So there's obviously the response initially when we have an event like this and doing some triage with livestock. Maybe back up a step in terms of where we are now to some of what producers, veterinarians can do as they first begin to assess circumstances that occur with a fire like this. What are some things they need to think through and working with both the livestock and the people on the ground?
I think the thing that we have to understand is it's a complex issue and no operation is the same. Each operation is going to handle this differently. Some need more help than others. But as we assess the cattle, and it's an ongoing assessment, but obviously there's those cattle that succumb to it, to the fire, and they're dead. There's cattle that have been hurt but still walking around, and then those cattle that happen to be in a location where they weren't hurt. And pardon me if there's other livestock involved, but we think mostly of cattle, but sheep and goats would be also major damages that would occur that with cattle still alive or burnt hides, and more importantly, probably the feet that have gotten so hot, and initially there may not be any separation at the coronary band that's obvious. But those are issues that can occur either from 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days after the fire. They appear to be normal, but then they start to become lame, and they might be not able to get around. And then if you look down and look at their feet, there's a separation at the corneal band. Also, the udders are a problem. Those cows that have been burnt, but they're walking around. Their udders, Travis, I don't know any other way, but you just got to almost feel each one of those to see if they've been damaged. Now you say, well, those cattle can be put to sleep. Well, today we have tools that can handle those pregnant animals. They may not ever be able to nurse that calf, but we can take that calf off and get a colostrum and then either bottle feed it, or actually there's calf ranches that have accepted those in our area. So those are two long-term effects that can be. We can't assume just because the cow is normal, looks good, walking around, there's no replacement for to feel that udder if you can get to it. Now, here again, with vast acreages, sometimes that's not always possible, but knowing if you have sick calves after this fire and you look up and they're getting thin, their mothers may not have milk. So that can be a long-term effect from it. What other damages?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, at the beginning, you're just triaging through an emergency, right? Like you said, there's those dead cows that succumb, unfortunately. And then you got a welfare situation. And depending on how large the herd is, that can be an issue is trying to find ammunition to be able to put those animals down. And once you get through that, then like Dr. Sparrow's talking about, you need to examine feet and udders are your biggest things. Eyes would be maybe tertiary, but not beyond that. But one of the things you mentioned, the Anderson Creek fire and the Starbuck fire. We learned some pretty good lessons, in my opinion, Doc. We tried some animals and maybe we thought, oh, maybe that animal will be okay. And those were maybe some mistakes. And the mistakes I'm talking about is like those coronary bands. They may look fine today. Here you are a week out from your fire, but they may look fine today, but they may not be. So getting a look at them, and you're right, sometimes our facilities burn down. So how can we actually physically get them done? And that's where working with your neighbors, finding people that have, maybe get you like a wheel corrals or something where you can handle those cattle and get a good look at them today. This is a good time right now to get a good look at those animals. And finally, everyone gets really worried about smoke inhalation. And I'm not going to downplay smoke inhalation. Doc, I believe it's the I know BRD is our number one issue in our industry as far as disease concerned, but that respiratory tract does a pretty good job of clearance in that smoke. And I've been pretty amazed by the just how infrequent smoke inhalation is when I order as a list of a problem, so to speak. And it's not as bad as these burns we're talking about. Would you have anything to add on that, Doc?
No, in fact, I can remember the Anderson Creek fire. There was a group of cattle, a ranch that had 800 cows, and I followed those steers through weaning, and I had a client that purchased those cattle that went to the feed yard, and there was no long-term damage in those lungs.
Probably some height issues would be the only thing I'd see is like, I saw a couple condemned after Starbuck, but lungs were fine. But the condemned was from hair that was burnt, the hide was burnt to the burnt down in there. They were still fine. But yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize.
So I think that sorting out the details of the importance of just euthanizing those cattle if they need to be. Now, the whole caveat depends on what somebody's equity position and their labor, their facilities, because there's times that, and depends on what somebody's insurance is like. This last fire, we had to take care of cattle at 5 days that because they had insurance, they had to be euthanized by 5 days. But they probably still had more value. But according to the insurance, they had to be gone, and so they could collect on the insurance policy. Now, I believe the LIP has over a period of time they need to, if they die from this or need to be euthanized because of this event, it could be for a few days longer. But understand that I believe within 10 days, person's going to know whether they're going to be able to be salvageable. And you've asked the next question might be, can we take these cows to slaughter? There's nothing saying that we can't, but I talked to one operation in Hereford, Texas, and they didn't want any cattle that their hides were damaged more than just singed hair because they saw from the previous fires down in Hemphill County a couple years ago, those cattle that were burned severely. They were going to be dark cutters, and USDA condemned those carcasses. So, here again, each situation's different, and being able to sort those out needs to be assessed there differently. We'd be the last to tell you, you go do this, and it'll be good. So, let me put it into context with a story that probably helps us understand. We had a client that. On Wednesday after the Starbuck fire, they called us. The wife called us and said, I'm worried about my husband. He's 70. He's got all of his cattle were in harm's way. And could you send somebody out to help us? And so we went out to help, and there was about 90 cows. And at that moment, we put down about 30 of them. There was 30 either needed to be put down or dead already. Well, because the owner didn't want us, we could see some were damaged. They needed to be euthanized, but it was his choice. So we went back in a few days, and there was more that were lame. There was more that weren't getting up. We euthanized another third of them on Thursday. By Saturday, he had made the choice that none of his cattle were able to move around, and they every one of them was euthanized. So even as I tell that story, it brings back a tremendous amount of emotion. But we as veterinarians were asked to come along and help. But we only did what they wanted us to do and asked a lot of questions versus standing there and say, you need to put up these all down. So I want to share that as an example of we got to read the client and help them walk through it and come alongside of them rather than tell them what to do. So I think part of our challenges in these fires and these tragic situations is yes, we have to help them take care of the cattle, but we got to come alongside of our friends and our families, our neighbors. And I think that's one thing the agricultural communities have done tremendously is come alongside each other. We as veterinarians have relationships with each one of these people, and we know them. We know how they're going to respond. And sometimes it's different with each client. So just like in our everyday work, we're treating the animals, but we're really caring for the people.
Dr. Spear, I think you hit on something there that Dr. Funk has mentioned earlier in an interview she did. Well, Dr. Funk, I'll just let you talk about some of the experience you've had. You had a different experience related to the bomb cyclone a number of years ago where there was some significant livestock losses and helping people document that. Maybe speak to that a little bit and the importance of that, of veterinarians working with clients to document what's occurred. So they can take full advantage of any compensation that's available.
Yeah, so that was it's the reason we're calling folks in that are experienced with these situations, because mine is kind of the opposite end of the spectrum on blizzard response, in particular that bomb cyclone. And I think a lot of our producers maybe underestimate the effect that these situations are going to have on them when they start truly getting down to triaging and documenting their livestock, particularly in these scenarios where we're dealing with cow-calf producers. You know, we've got multi-generational genetics and herds that have been built over multiple generations in that operation potentially. So if you are one of those producers, reaching out to someone like your veterinarian or, you know, a trusted person that's outside the situation that can help you do that documentation can be really helpful. Protect yourself and your. I think Dr. McCarty, you mentioned this when we were talking about this situation, that a lot of these guys putting these animals down, it's no different than how we think about our pets. It has a huge emotional toll on us. So I think that's probably the biggest piece is use your folks that are there that are interested in helping you. Every producer has that team behind them, that network somewhere. Just reach out to them. Don't be afraid to ask for help. It's really hard on us to, you know, to take picture after picture after picture of dead livestock, and that's really what we get into in some of these situations. The documentation has to be done, and it has to be done then. We don't get a second chance to do it, and it seems pretty gruesome at the time to be thinking that way. But we really don't have a choice in the matter.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Becky. I mean, one of the producers down here south in Oklahoma, his exact words were, anytime he had to put a cow down, it was like putting his dog, like shooting his dog. And he said, then picture have to do that again 150 more times. And that's kind of the extreme case, but that is, it's part of that livelihood. And exactly right. And the Starbuck fire came through, and we personally, my family personally got affected by that, and it was difficult for me personally to do it. So I had some other colleagues come out and document for me, because it was hard for me personally to do that, even as a veterinarian. And so it's not easy, but it has to be done.
Any recommendations for producers? Again, I know for many, they're probably at the end of that time frame when we release this podcast, but unfortunately, this kind of event's going to happen again. So, any thoughts on terms of here's some good things you need to know around documentation, things that will be helpful to you if and when this kind of event occurs?
One of the things that we've seen in several different fires is that they need to document the number of cattle that they had at the beginning of the year, and then be able to show how many of the cattle they have at the end of these events. And we keep preg check records, and many of them came in to ask for those and signed those, and we were third party verification for that process. Rather than there was some of these ranches so big that we couldn't find all the dead cattle, so you couldn't go find them, and they couldn't gather them up, and or they were in such ecosystems that they're out there in the sand hills. You're not going to go drag a dead animal off of that just to start the wind blowing again. So common sense did prevail, and I would encourage them to get to have an understanding of the documentation from the FSA. Each one of those counties in Kansas that appear to be different in what they require, and they have to be accountable to how that money is distributed. So ask for that sort of what that documentation needs to look like per county. If you anticipate getting LIP, that'd be important there, because I'm thinking of the other forms of help as far as building the fences. And there's also ELAP if you have to, let's say, send your cattle away to be fed because there's nothing to take care of them. It'll take care of transportation and extra feed costs that you incur out of pocket, a percentage of that. So I would encourage you to make sure you visit with the FSA offices to understand each one of those programs and how they can help you. Unfortunately, we live in a time where the cattle are very, very valuable, and the LIP doesn't necessarily stay current with our current cattle market. But I guess the way that I look at it is the government doesn't have to help us at all. So just educating yourself as much as you can in the middle of this chaos.
Yeah, absolutely. Having that initial record, just having inventory records is really huge in these situations, regardless if it's a blizzard that Becky was talking about or a fire. Another thing I've ran into would be, we kind of forget the value of our brand when we brand our cattle. And sometimes these cattle might push through fences and get mixed up with the neighbors and trying to sort through that. Even after a fire, our brand can still be visible. So that's something to think about. So I know sometimes we kind of get lax on that. And Dr. Spear mentioned insurance earlier, as far as like trying to be prepared for other things. As people hear that, they just so they're aware, insurance is usually is a specific rider. So I'm not an expert on insurance, but just because you got some sort of casualty or something like that, it's probably not probably you're probably not covered. You have to have a specific one for most insurance companies on fire.
Let's shift gears a little bit and just talk about now cattle that have gone through this fire. I'm thinking here in Nebraska, primarily thinking about cows that have not yet calved. You already mentioned the importance of examining udders and checking those out. But what are some other things we need to be looking at in terms of caring for these cattle as we move over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, even next couple months, as far as things that can be supportive to encourage health and thrift? But also things we not might want to be paying attention to in terms of lasting impacts that may not initially be obvious.
You know what, Dr. Spear mentioned each individual operation is going to be unique, and every person's going to handle this differently. I'll give you an example of this last Ranger Road fire here. Individual had about 40 cows left. He lost quite a few cows, and he was just going to keep those cows on his blow sand pasture. He's going to calve them out there, and we kind of talked through the pros and cons of that. Some of these pastures probably aren't very, very suitable to be calving out in. So being willing to, if someone offers to take those cows somewhere else and calve on cleaner ground, that'd be something I would certainly recommend is keep in mind the environment that we've got left. That'd be one thing there that comes to my mind.
So we haven't had any rain since the Ranger fire, and we're out a little over a month. And it in those areas that are burned, it's really difficult to drive by. The grass is trying to come, but we sure could use a half inch of rain. And so it's no different if you're in your area in Nebraska. It's going to be sandy. And I think as a whole, I picture April May calvers more so in that area. So you're forced to not to have to deal with baby calves that were already born that to deal with as a whole. But just taking care of the basic needs of those cattle of energy and protein, water. And also I think those cattle have been through a tremendous amount of stress. And I think that a certain degree of acclimation, a certain degree of, hey, let's be your friends, let's release the pressure, because I think those cattle carry about a great deal of stress and fear. And moving them to a new environment, we have to realize if we move those cattle to a new environment that they are not comfortable with, they haven't been used to the sounds of certain pickups, the sounds of people, how people walk, things that we can do that it might be appear to be not necessary would be just to care for those cattle and remove the stress and become their friends again. And that's so important to the well-being of these livestock animals. And I can remember people from the media calling and asking, particularly the Starboard Fire, well, what do you think these cattle ranchers are doing? They've lost their homes. And I said, the first thing they're most concerned about is taking care of the cattle. And they're concerned about the animals that have brought them a living. And that's core values to these ranchers that love these animals. They're not just a widget. They're an animal. They give us new offspring every year. And that mentality resonates deeply. And as we go care for those animals, it's more than protein, energy, and vitamin A, and more than water, but it's just care for them. So if you have to move them, work hard at releasing the stress. Go back to something Travis mentioned earlier, is that this will give you an example, and I tell you a mistake I made. I lost a third of my cow herd in the Starbuck fire, and so we were tired of putting cows down, and I saw a cow that had a white teat, and she was bred, had an embryo in her, and I thought, I'm going to keep her. Well, she kept getting bred for 3 years, and probably call this poor management on my part, but we were still trying to build numbers because she was bred. Well, Finally realized that she wasn't bringing a calf in, and I reached under her after 3 years, and her udder was hard. Even though it looked pretty, looked soft, looked white, but that was an example of I made a mistake in not touching that udder early on. Well, she weighed 2,300 pounds when I sold her because I figured she wasn't worth much to me. So I share that those specific examples to help us stop and think about what are the situations for me that I could slide by and not pay attention to detail those details. So each producer is going to have to, what are the details that are most important to me so that I can function? The larger our operations, the less labor we have. We may not handle things like somebody that has 7 or 80 cows and somewhat well confined and being able to get around it. No operation's the same, and so ask somebody to come alongside and help you think.
On that note, I guess my follow-up question to that is for both of you. That's one of my concerns going forward is as we calve these cows, those operations that are like, well, we got away with this. We've got some singed udders, maybe some singed underlines. How are you evaluating? Do we need to wait for that calf to be born to know that we potentially have a problem with lactation? Or what was the recovery of those udders? What did that look like for folks that are maybe concerned about that as we go into calving and thinking, well, how many orphan calves am I going to have to manage, even though these cows are doing okay, but probably not recovered enough to nurse that calf, maybe?
We've got to remember that colostrum is a one-time deal. If we don't get colostrum in those calves, they're six times more likely to get sick and three times more likely to die. So in some instances, there's really no replacement for going and feeling those udders. And you have an opportunity to do that now. So if the majority of your operations are spring calving, we need to get on that right now. We had half our operations that were hurt in the Starbuck fire were fall calving. So we had some time and margin to be able to do that a little bit later. These cows had just been confirmed bred and kicked out. We were reminding our people in the fall, make sure you check those udders before when you put them into calving pastures so that you know, because if we don't get colostrum, then we cascade into a whole different myriad of challenges. So I don't know what you think, Travis, but I'd be right on that, and I would know what all my cows are.
I would agree with that 100%. And going even a step further, thinking about like replacement heifers you might have out on grass that you're getting ready to breed here this spring and summer for next year, these virgin heifers. And the Starbuck fire had a couple situations where even those heifers there, their teats got burnt enough that, and we didn't know anything about, we didn't know it at the time. We're so focused on the factory, the cow calf operation itself, right? And we kind of forgot about those replacement heifers. So getting your hands on even those, even though they're not lactating, not even building the udder yet, they will at some point in their life. And even the damages today on them could be enough.
Good point, Travis.
What are some other key take homes, I guess, from your experience you would encourage folks to focus on, maybe as a producer visit with a veterinarian or from a veterinarian perspective visiting with producers, things they want to be aware of, think through as we go through these next few weeks?
Another thing we really haven't talked about, we haven't talked about the bulls, right? We've been focused so much on the mama cows as well. So we also can't forget bulls. They got a little special organ, in their scrotum that you guys in Nebraska, you guys are very aware of frostbite and freeze damage. There can be burns to the scrotum as well on some of these bulls that we need to be watching out as well. So don't forget about them between now and time when you're going to turn them out to breed. So you'll want to get, if you're a producer that might skip a BSE, this would be the year you don't want to skip the BSE if you went to this fire.
We had an instance, a story, if you will, and it's helpful to understand things that we had a client in this particular fire, this in the Ranger Road fire, that got all their cows pulled into a trap and into where the grass was really short, and their bulls wouldn't come in because they'd already been separated from their cows. Well, all the bulls got left out. Two bulls were dead out of about 15. About seven of them had to be euthanized because of scrotal issues. Just their feet were already falling off in 3 days. They tried to salvage some, And a week later, they called me up and said, what do we do now? And I said, well, euthanasia is probably going to be the best unless you can get them on a Relyzer truck. But it's a challenge. So those bulls, if they've come through it without a problem, without being burned, more than likely they'll be fine. But like Dr. McCarty said, I would certainly fertility test those bulls and get your hands on them. And here again, don't assume just because they look good, all their body parts look good. Get your hands on them and feel the scrotum and see what they're doing.
When should we be thinking about a BSE exam on these bulls that maybe seem to be okay, but we know stress has an impact on things and spermatogenesis is a time frame. What should we be thinking about in terms of when that BSE exam should occur?
If we think about spermatogenesis, that those sperm cells that are produced today don't come out for 60 days. I mean, you ought to be looking at 2 months from now to maybe test those bulls and see if they're fertile. And the challenge with that is the bull sales are already done, but I would be making sure that you have enough bulls to get you through the breeding season, assuming maybe one or two of these may have failed because of the stress of the fire. And taking care of those animals just like you would cows, and maybe have to dry lot them and put them on a ration. Maybe there's a place you can go with them. Here again, that ELAP would pay for that if you have to move those around. So that'd be really important.
As we point towards wrapping up our conversation today, any final thoughts, parting words, words of encouragement for both veterinarians and producers as they just continue to walk their way through these circumstances?
I think there's overall bigger pictures and trying to step back and look at opportunity that's in front of us, even in the midst of a disaster. Sometimes there's things that come alongside of us and cause us tremendous challenges like these fires, and ask yourself, is there any change in my breeding program and how I grow and breed and develop heifers? And just take that step back and look at that. If people come to offer you help, don't be afraid to say sure. I remember when there was a 20-year-old kid from Nebraska brought hay to me, and it was so humbling. If somebody offers you help that come from a long ways away, take that help and with grace. Those of us in agriculture aren't very good at saying, yeah, we could use the help, but please know people want to help us. We don't see this in the national media. Don't worry about that. You've got people zooming to help you and coming alongside to help. Trust me, I don't think we need FEMA necessarily to come and help us. We need just let the agricultural community help, our neighbors help, and I think we can accomplish so much more. I saw pictures of communities feeding firefighters. That was heartwarming. And you'll have people in town that don't own a cow. They don't own an acre of land, but they want to come out alongside and help you. Receive that help and just say thank you. And when we receive help, that creates accountability on our part to say, I'm going to persevere and figure this out, and we're going to get through this. That's exactly what happened when these young people from different states would come and drop hay off, and thinking, I'm going to continue to help our people think and persevere through this. And Travis, if I remember right, when I look around at that Starbuck fire, when nearly 75% of our county was burned, I can't remember any producers that threw in the towel and said, I'm quitting. There
No.
were some older people that retired and said, I'm not, I think it's time for me to give it up. But nobody quit. And I think that's because people came to our aid. They came and said, we want to help you.
No, absolutely. And don't be afraid to take that help. And if you're someone listening to this, it was on, maybe on the fringe and you didn't get your operation or you're in an area that was really close, it didn't get burnt. There's some thing called survivor's guilt, and if you're wanting to help out, definitely help your neighbor out. But the guys that got hit, the people that got hit by this right now, they're going through, I call it like this adrenaline rush right now. They're doing stuff and getting things done. Check in on your neighbor a couple months from now. A couple months from now, reality might sit in, And that's another important time right there too. When we're talking about help and you want to help your neighbor. That's in my mind, a couple of months from now, maybe later on in the summer. That's going to be a time when all of a sudden reality does stick in. But there is, like Dr. Spear said, there is opportunity. I joked with my dad after the Starbucks fire that, hey, now we can put our fence back in and put our gates where we want them at. Maybe make our operation just a little bit better. And I know several people did that, and just trying to find the pauses in this is very important.
I think one other thing, and Travis brought it up, is that if you're coming to help people, if you're coming to aid them, and you've dropped off some hay, and let's say you're a rancher also, don't be afraid to sit on the tailgate and just visit with them. Sometimes they sh share with strangers better than they do us as neighbors. And I can remember a friend of mine from Mullen, Nebraska, bringing 2 loads of hay down during the Starbucks fire, and I knew there was this gentleman that was alone. He wasn't married, and I said, "Would you mind visiting with him when you drop off that hay?" Because I knew he wouldn't talk with his neighbors or friends, and he was somewhat isolated, and I was pretty concerned about him. So take those opportunities and just care for those people that you're helping out with hay or fence material or money or. I think the thing to remember is that these people all have livestock, but we're all in the relationship business and we need to come alongside people.
I want to thank all of you for your time today. Obviously, this is a topic that's hard to talk about, but super important. And I hope the principles we talked about, both in caring for the livestock, but more importantly, caring for the people, will be an encouragement to those who've been impacted by the fire. And we hope we don't see another event like this again this year. But reality is, the forecast is one that's going to be challenging, I think. And so it's my hope that the things we talked about will provide some perspective and value to those who have been impacted and will be impacted in the future. And I also just want to mention, for those of you who are listening to this, the contact information and for Dr. Spare and Dr. McCarty, you can reach out to us if you'd like to get a hold of those. Of course, Dr. Vanderline, Dr. Funk are at the Great Plains Veterinary Education Center, and we want to be a resource and a help to you as you process and work through these circumstances. So again, thank you all for your time today. Appreciate your thoughts and your inputs and your caring not only for the people, but the livestock of your respective areas.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you.